Everyone faces questions and decisions that require insight and answers as we move forward personally, professionally, and corporately in all areas of this thing we call life in America today. Hello, this is Joe Schofield, and I invite you to tune in every Monday evening from 6 to 7 p.m. as we talk together and hear from key leaders of all ages and backgrounds about your questions. Interesting, informative, intuitive, but always encouraging. Tune us in on BBS Radio Network.
Join Pastor Joe and co-hosts Ron Greer, Dr. Paul Hall, Stephanie Thayer, and Dr. Craig Thayer in Raising Expectations.
Well, good evening, friends, and welcome to 2025, our first program to begin the new season, 2025, on Raising Expectations. And we want to wish you the best. Happy New Year to you. We know God's got great plans for each of us in our individual lives, and our prayer is that He's got special things that you're going to discover that will not only raise your expectations, but draw you closer to Him and just impact everybody around you as they watch what He does in your life. We're just glad that you're part of our Raising Expectations family and appreciate the notes and the texts that we get from you. So just want you to know you're in our prayer. So we're going to begin tonight. We know we've got a really, really exciting show for you tonight. And we want to begin with letting you know once again about our team. Some of you may be new for 2025. The team, we were ready to roll going into this year. Now we're going to start on the West Coast again with from Lompoc, California. We have Dr. Paul Hall, who's a retired pastor and teacher and educator. And Paul is there in Lompoc. And like we said, the last time we were together, he is the man of the year there in Lompoc. We took the vote and it's closed now and he won. So yeah, he is doing 2025. Yeah. It was close. Yeah, it was close, yeah. So Dr. Hall there, and you're going to look forward, if you don't know Paul yet, getting to know him this year. Good to see you, Paul.
All right. Thanks.
All right. And Paul and I are going to head. We may have a few folks, a lot of you have been calling in with a little bit of cool or cold noses. Some of the weather's been a lot different across America. But as we head back to the east, the south part of the east, the southeast part, there in Dalton, Georgia, we have Steph Thayer and Dr. Craig Thayer. And actually, this is Steph Thayer. Craig's in a meeting, but he'll probably pop in here pretty quick. But Steph, as you know, is a health and wellness coach, and she is also one who helps to counsel and direct and give strong, wonderful, caring biblical counsel to women across the nation as she speaks with them and produces information that helps them on her website. And you can see that on our website. It's right here, and it's called Live Your Life Out Loud. And you can find that right there, Live Your Life Out Loud. She helps women across America as being a friend and also using the Word of God and Scripture and things that really encourage and strengthen women everywhere. And that strengthens the family. We're all about raising expectations in all facets of life for men and women and kids and hopefully the whole family, because God loves us all. It's got a plan for us. You want to check some of those resources, you can find your website there at our website. And I'll give you that website really quick. That is bbsradio.com/raising expectations. Again, that's bbsradio.com/raising expectations. And if you go there, you'll be able to find our team and some of the things about them. You'll also find the websites there that you see for Steph and for Craig and the things that they do. And you'll want to check that out. Live Your Life Out Loud. And if you scroll down on our site, you'll be able to see, we'll tell you more later, different things about the team and about their families and what they do. And so we'll be sharing some of those things with you. And boy, we want you to know it's good to be back in 2025, back in the saddle again, and to have TJ with us. TJ's we're praying for TJ. We've got the greatest engineer you could imagine. This young man is just terrific, and he got himself a little cold, so we're praying he feels better, and we appreciate him being TJ on the spot. That used to be Johnny on the spot, but we changed it because he's so good at getting right on what we're doing every minute and of the way. So thank you, TJ. So that is our website there, and that is Dr. Paul Hall, and Steph is there, and Steph's husband is Dr. Craig Thayer, and hopefully you'll see him in a little while if he can get back in the meeting he's tied in. But you'll also find on our website his book. His book on there is called Saved. He is a trauma surgeon and a missionary surgeon, and you'll find some of those things. And his book there on our site, you'll find, is called Saved. And it simply is finding God in the ordinary things of life. It's a trauma surgeon's true account of the miracles of his life. And boy, every day when you walk with Jesus, life is a miracle. And you find how he works in the littlest things of life when you watch him every step of the way, each and every day. You want to read the stories of what he did in Craig's life. And that leads to what he does continually now in Craig's life, as he does through Dr. Paul's life and through each of us, as we hopefully, you and I and all of us, strive to live our lives for Christ and to encourage and give the strength of God's word and build people up and watch what God can do on those expectations. So that is Steph Thayer and Dr. Craig Thayer, and they're there in Dalton, Georgia, all the way there on the East Coast. So also you're going to find, if we all pack our bags and head from the East Coast back towards the central part of the United States, actually Central America, the great state of Texas. And you'll find there, when we get to Texas, Pastor Ron Greer. And he's in the thriving metropolis of McKinney. And Ron is a director, regional director, and speaker, a great counselor with Man in the Mirror. And you can read about him there, what he does out of McKinney, Texas. And they have a great ministry also with Man in the Mirror, where they do men help men to become stronger in the walk of the Lord and understand how God's working in their lives, and to develop the great big word, patience, and watch, they may have been through difficult times, but God is always working in those difficult times. And he also directs that ministry, as they all do, towards churches, helping churches to understand men in their church that they might be all that God's called them to be, and build the ministry of the local church. So important that the church gets out there where people live and touch the lives of people. And Ron's really good at that. They lead with a purpose, and that's it right there. And we just love and appreciate what he does. And it's the same with Dr. Paul there and Steph. And we will be hopefully seeing Craig back a little later. And what he does is the same kind of situation. So as we go into all of this, we'll want you to know that God is working in the lives of these people, as I know he's working in your life also. So we're going to get right into tonight with some questions and things that we have, and we want to get right on the ball for you. We have a special guest tonight. He's part of the family. You know him. He's been with us before, Frank Roberson, and he has his own protection agency, as you know. In fact, I wanted to just read a little of that. As I got to looking at that this week, I got pretty excited to see, as I got the message out to you, the things that God is doing. He is a counterintelligence specialist, a threat specialist, as you know, directs his own Black Rhino Protection Agency. He's a former director and district director at the United States House of Representatives. He's been on Fox, on CBS, and other media, discussing the dangers that we are facing in our nation today, as we talked about, and specifically beginning with the assassination attempts on our president-elect Donald Trump. And then later we talked about what he has been doing even right now. He's been on CBS radio, like I said, talking about many, many things that we're facing that are kind of in a danger zone right now. And you can see some of the pictures there. My favorite one that Frank puts out there is right here. This is the Texas version of the Black Rhino. And there you see it right there. Frank is a kind of a guy. That's a good one, huh, guys? But yeah, I think that's awesome. Don't you guys? So I had to put that one up. Thanks, TJ. That's really good. So in any event, as we look at that, we want to welcome Frank on. And Frank, we welcome you with, once again, the round of applause. Goes left to right to Raising Expectations. Good to have you back with us tonight. And Frank, welcome. And give us a word. Maybe start with that great logo, how you got rolling in that and what that means.
Oh, my goodness. You picked some pictures, man.
Well, those are home runs.
We have great investigators.
Yes, wow. Absolutely.
Oh, I was better. I guess you missed the one with the Santa hat.
Yeah, We got that one.
We'll get right on that. We'll get right on that.
Oh, I'm sorry. What was the question again?
Well, I think they got a good look at that and kind of got them to think that. The thing I appreciate about you, Frank, is that not only are you really good at what you do, you love the Lord, you and your wife are people of faith, but you also have the ability, watching you on some of the shows that you did with Fox News and others, the first one there in the assassination attempt, and then some that people have been talking to you recently. We just wanted you to share with us kind of what you see as to the dangers that we're facing as a nation. I'm going to throw a few things out there and let everybody just talk about it. The dangers we're facing as a nation, the special day coming up here, the inaugurational day, what you see may be happening there and what to look for, what happened again in New Orleans. And we've all been reading about that and again, Las Vegas. And then maybe how that impacts the world as a whole. And I could think of some others, particularly that seem to be happening right now. I don't know if if Joe Biden is thinking of these things, or if these are simply being given him by somebody else, like what he's doing about the coastal oil and everything like this. But just kind of get your insight and intake on some of these things, and we'll let you start where you want, and then we'll just go with it. Ron, everybody just jump in and let's have some talk.
All right. Well, first off, the world is obviously in a different place than it was 4 years ago, 8 years ago. You know, starting with the first assassination attempt to how to keep President Trump safe at the inauguration, where the technology that the bad actors are using nowadays, it's not just looking for sharpshooters from 1,000 yards and in, and putting some guys in a stairwell. I've been on details where guys were Secret Service on a presidential detail, and all they did was sit in a staircase, you know, 4 or 5 blocks away, making sure no one got to the roof. You know, those days, they're still there, but now you have to worry about drones. I did a report a handful of years ago, a briefing memo on our adversaries, Russia in particular, 3D printing drones with the carbon fiber. So they're really light, so they can add some cargo on there. And it was a threat assessment. And on page 6, it talks about how far behind the United States is on that technology and how far ahead they are. And last week, I was able to get someone actually sent me a copy of the directives they're now putting out in Ukraine, how to counter and defend against drones with weapons on them. So we've got to catch up on some stuff, because the inauguration, I'm going to bet a lot that the Secret Service is not going to talk him out of walking the parade route.
Yeah.
That's one of those things that he loves to do. He's going to want to do.
Yeah.
That's just going to bring in drones into play, the sharpshooters into play, 3D printed guns in the crowd. So it's important to have the counter surveillance teams in the crowds. It's going to be important to make sure not just looking for snipers, but the airspace. So they might actually need to put some guys on roofs where they usually didn't put them on roofs, and then figure out some strategies to, you know, block the signals without affecting other things in the area that might be with local law enforcement or stuff like that being affected. So there's a lot of different things. And regarding New Orleans, on this show, I've said multiple times, I've said it on just about every interview I've done on the assassination and the one in Sky News that I did the other day from Abu Dhabi. There's always pre-event indicators, and if people are paying attention, you guys can spot things before they happen. And the guy that ran the truck down there, he was doing his thing. He rode his bicycle around. He had those Meta glasses on, the video, the route, everything he was going to do. And then they have video of him walking through there and placing the coolers that had the IEDs in them. Now, if you're in an airport and you see a bag just sitting there, most people just say, oh, the guy left his bag or whatever like that. That's the problem. If you see a bag sitting there by itself, for any reason, you need to say something, and let alone a cooler sitting there.
Right.
So there are pre-event indicators that could have been picked up by law enforcement down there, by anybody just keeping a good eye out. Why is this guy dropping off a cooler? Oh, the guy left the cooler. Somebody grab him. Hey, get that cooler back. You know, tell somebody if they see that stuff, but they didn't see that stuff. So that's part of being aware in our community and not just have our face in our phones, headphones on where we can't hear anything. And you got to take an interest on what's going around because going on around you, because those things are going to be a mess, and that's just going to make it worse when we're not paying attention. How about that start?
Yeah, boy. I heard the police chief there say, you know, they had these things were supposed to come up from the ground, right, Ron? They come up from underground, just block cars from driving on Bourbon Street there. They were not even functional going into all the holiday stuff that they do in New Orleans. And he said, we even used to put cement trucks that were full so they couldn't get around, trash trucks filled, and they did nothing. And it makes you think, you know, like you're saying, why aren't people doing that, I wonder, you know, in leadership?
Today, a reporter showed the little bollards that they set up today, but he went over to it, and he was able to lean it over with his hands. It's not even connected to the ground. It's just there. They have others that have been put out, but the company that gave them to them said they weren't deployed properly. So, and New Orleans hasn't responded back on how to put them in properly. So we got all that kind of stuff going on too.
Here's my question on that. It still boggles my brain how clueless people are. But let me go on a tangent. I think part of that is intentional. I just think the school system, the media, social media is designed to distract people. So they, anyway, that's just another conspiracy theory. Let me leave that alone. But again, it boggles my brain that we have no mechanism whereby we can train people to be more observant. And you would think the news media, given where we are when it comes to threat assessments and, I mean, threats and security issues, that you hear the same announcement here in the airport, used to hear in the airport over and over again. You see something, some unattended, call somebody, say something that would keep giving people the notion that you need to be aware of your environment. You need to have your head on a swivel, especially in large crowds. But they don't. It's still mind-boggling to me. And the thing in New Orleans, I'm thinking he has spent a lot of time, as you said, spent a lot of time surveying, studying. Because, I mean, who knows that the barriers won't stop a truck unless you were there studying and looking at that beforehand. You know, who knows, how would he know where to put the IEDs unless he's been there beforehand? But you can't walk down Bourbon Street, you know, after it's full of people, decide where to place something.
It's tough because I think he was behind the schedule or something. I know he was walking around about 1 o'clock, but to do that at 3:15 when everybody's already gone, he's placed the devices and he's got the remote in the car with him.
Right.
He gets out and starts shooting. I think he had plans on parking somewhere and he couldn't get there. Maybe that was a distraction because he couldn't drive his truck. He had the only way to get his truck down there was to run everybody over, and he decided to do that instead. But I think he had alternative plans. But I've said many times that the bad guys do as much advanced work as I do.
Yeah.
And you guys and the viewers, there are guys around the country like me that do a training called the SAFE program, which is we teach situational awareness for everyday people to be able to recognize, set baselines in the crowds that they're in. And it helps. We've had some people go through that class here at the Arlington Chamber of Commerce and a couple other groups that I've done that talk to, that have called me a couple of weeks later and said, hey, you know, I noticed this and I noticed that. And you know, I saw some guy twice and I was waiting to see him the third time, you know, because I always talk about that one. But, you know, so there are people that do that class and we do that. We do it on Zoom. We can do it however, but we do those classes. And it's important because, you know, and people think you're overzealous. People think, oh, you're just, you know, hyperbole and just a worry word or whatever you want to call it. But those things can save your life. Seeing the same guy three times following you around can save a female from getting attacked in the parking lot.
Yeah. I mean, everybody thinks it's overboard until it happens.
Exactly.
Then it's why didn't you do something?
Yeah, where were you? That kind of thing.
Right. That brings to mind also some part of my frustration with a number of large churches. They have security, but there's no sort of training and expertise on place. And you would think, especially, here, you've mm-hmm. got 10,000, 15,000, 20,000 people in a church building.
Yeah, yeah.
And you've got, I can spot maybe 10 or 12 security guys.
Yeah.
But there's no coordination. There's no, their doors open all over the place. I will mm-hmm. say the church, I won't name the name. They hired an ex-CIA agent or ex-Secret Service guy in charge of security now. And somebody finally got a clue. So instead of having all the doors around the entire church open all to everybody anytime, they finally started funneling people through one or two doors. There's a number of changes they made, and I praise God for it, because they finally had somebody who was security-minded that came in and said, listen, here's some things you need to do. And on top of that, offering people in the church, deacons and officers, the same kind of training you were talking about. But they need more, Frank. And I'll send you a text.
They do, yeah. There's a church in Bedford that I was protecting the pastors, and they brought in three guys like me. We all had the radios, but we were basically backup, because what happens is they will, and I've seen this at multiple churches, is there'll be a couple of guys in the congregation that have their concealed carry permit, and they decide to volunteer for it. And they're not trained. They're reactive. They're not proactive. We're hired at this church, even though they still had two police officers, because police officers are trained to be reactive and not proactive.
Right.
So a trained protection agent can actually find out and do the body language thing, do the whole thing, and find all the little key indicators that somebody is there to do bad. Where most likely, unless it's a completely obvious situation, the police officer that's assigned there is going to be reactive and going in and afterwards, after the fact. So I applaud the churches that go out and get somebody from law enforcement, or not particularly just law enforcement, but a protective service side of law enforcement to help them out.
Absolutely.
Someone was saying the other day, we need an Israeli mentality, basically, to get to that place. And that would mean that not only with the people, like we're saying, but the law enforcement may have to take a whole different look. And of course, the FBI, I don't know what we know and don't know where that stands,
Well, well, let me ask you another question on the New Orleans deal. So give me your opinion. Trained, radicalized, and then sent out as a part of a bigger group of people, or just an individual? Because I do have a person in Washington who tells me something that scares the heck out of me, but I'll get your input on it.
Yeah. One thing that you do and that you're supposed to do in my position is, one, you no complacency. Everybody's a threat. And you have to have imagination. And there's no such thing as coincidences.
Well, you said everybody's a threat, you said, right?
Yeah, everybody's a threat, right?
Did you hear that, honey?
But
I'm not paranoid.
I was at a networking group a couple weeks ago, and I was just joking around, and I used an old General Mattis a quote for our company motto. I said, our company, because everyone's doing little things at the end of their 30-second thing. Right. They're doing mottos. And I said, our motto is be gracious, be polite, but have a plan to kill everyone you meet. And one lady in the crowd goes, what? Oh, my God. But in reality, you have to think of it that way nowadays. Yes. Go out and some stranger gets in within 20 feet of you. I don't care what weapon you have and how well you're trained. That guy still has a timing advantage on getting to you first.
Yes.
So
I'm sorry.
I don't believe in coincidences. Yes. And the two rented their vehicles from the same place. They served in the same Army base, Fort Bragg, and so did the gentleman that tried to assassinate Trump at the golf course, which was the perimeter left wide open for whatever reason after Biden and the Secret Service said he had presidential level, sitting presidential level security. That blows my mind.
Right.
They would be outside that perimeter. No one get close to that perimeter if he had full. Yes. They did that when he was president the first time. They had Secret Service on the outside of the gates and swept it with dogs and everything else. If they had done the sweep, which they said they didn't, which is complacency, then if they run the dogs through there at 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the morning, they found out at 2:30. So he was there at midnight, 1 o'clock. So they run those dogs at 4, 5, 6 o'clock in the morning. They would have found this guy at the fence line if they didn't do that properly. So a lot of it's complacency, but I don't believe in coincidences. I think a lot more is going to come out. I think it's part of a bigger group overseas, and whether they've been and come into this, been able to get into this country through the border or whatever, I'm not sure. But if they're still putting out warnings, as I saw this morning, obviously they know something they don't want us to panic over, and they're going to try to be as safe as possible. And the information they give us.
Well, I have a friend who's there in an agency who swears to me that they know for a fact they have more than 1,000 either Al Qaeda or ISIS related or trained folk who are in the country.
Yeah.
Any hear anything like that at all?
I've heard something similar, but not that extensive. But here's one question I have. The video they said they had of three people helping him put stuff in the back of the truck. What happened to that? All of a sudden he's by himself. All of a sudden they're looking for three people. Yes. Have a video of them helping him put stuff in the truck, and then now the video's gone, and they don't have they've not brought up the other three people. Originally, remember, the FBI didn't call it. It said it was not a terrorist attack.
It's not a terrorist threat.
Yeah, she was replaced overnight by somebody from D.C., which now we don't have the connections. Now we don't have the video of the three people helping him put the stuff in the truck. So there are questions there, but, you know, I don't know. I mean,
So do you think it's incompetence or just mistakes or intention?
I was shocked.
Well,
question.
Starting with Butler, Pennsylvania, I will tell you that the leadership is they're covering their own rear ends. They're making decisions based on complacency. Butler should have been at least 1,000 yards, which was, that situation never would have happened. There's no drunk flying over, no kid parking in the law enforcement parking lot.
Right.
And an officer that's just leaving for duty radioing, hey, some kid just parked in our lot, and nobody goes checks on it. None of that stuff would have happened if the perimeter was set the way it was. And that decision is made at the field office in Pittsburgh.
Okay.
Because the lady in Philadelphia, and they had the UN General Assembly going on, and they had not enough agents to put on Donald Trump that day, so they brought in guys from Homeland Security who are not trained as protectors.
Right. No.
So they don't even know what to look for. The counter surveillance teams were not in the crowd, which would have picked up on what the crowd was saying. Look at the guy on the roof. There's a lot of complacency, and then there's a lot of the I think the acting Secret Service director, one thing that he did say in his hearing was the lack of imagination. Because the first thing I learned from a Secret Service agent before I got started in this business was, if I didn't think about it, the bad guys have already thought of it.
Right.
And if you're going out there and standing on the stage in Butler, or you're the chief of police or whoever, I found out there's people in charge of the scenario there from the New Orleans Department of Homeland Security or Louisa.
Yeah.
If you're walking through that area, try to keep it safe, and you can't imagine a truck driving down that road after having one in Germany a couple weeks ago, and of course 2016, which led to them buying the bollards in the first place.
Exactly.
Imagine somebody driving up on the sidewalk past the police cruiser that was parked at the entrance of it. You're not doing your job, or you're not full trained.
Hey, Ron, your Avon order is here.
Come here. What is that?
Hey, you know, the older we get, the more I think about when you said what you said. Is it somebody just covering up? Is it somebody pretending it's not there? What did we learn from Pearl Harbor? I mean, what a mess. What did we learn from the World Trade Center? What did we learn on 9/11? Why are we so quick to complacency? It's kind of like Ron was saying. Are they just looking the other way because they're so busy covering their tails, like you're saying? Or I'm being kind of blunt, but I mean, people are asking questions all the time. I get these texts; they really wonder about that, Frank.
Hey, Joe, just for clarity, there were two two Twin Tower attacks.
Yeah, that's right. That's amen. People down in the basement, right?
Yeah, they forget the first one. Yeah, sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's the one I meant. Thanks, Ron. Thanks for clarifying that. It was the one I meant.
Stephanie? Okay, wait. What was the first one?
Their first attempt, the blind sheikh attempted to blow up the foundation of the World Trade Center and bring it down. It didn't work.
How long ago was that?
That was
1990 something.
I didn't know that. 92, something like that. The blind sheikh.
Yeah.
Long time to get her.
Was Kim driving?
So it's one of the questions you ask at times, because you know it makes you think that either it's horrible incompetence, or like you said, how can you be that complacent? You know, if we were talking 1975, 1979, I understand the complacency.
Yeah.
But if you're talking after 9/11, you're talking the shoe bomber, just go down the line.
Yeah. How is
there room for complacency? And with this, things that close, that behind, close to each other.
Yeah.
It's mind-boggling to me.
It is.
What do you think?
That is pretty crazy, because after 9/11, you know, everyone came together. Everyone was so patriotic. George Bush had 85% approval rating through the roof. He took the surplus that he got, and he built Homeland Security, got the planes safe, got the airport safe, everything else. Mm-hmm. And then what is it? Just 3 or 4 years later, they're burning flags again, and they're doing this whole thing and going back to their. It still comes down to, so when I was doing the working the politicians and I had official duties when I worked for Congress both times, and it's amazing to hear the different conversations that go on in the building in DC, and then go in the district and hear the other conversations that are happening out there out in the district. They're two different things, and they're supposed to match, right? Mm-hmm. And that's right around 2010, Harry Reid pulled some stuff that started down this road. He was the first, I believe, to throw in $3 million of his Democrat money into a Republican Senate race, Senate race, but threw it in the primary because he was trying to get the candidate that he wanted. The one he knew he could beat was Sharon Angle. And he was able to get rid of the lady, just had her name right at the top of my tongue. And she was the chairman of the party. She was a great fundraiser, Sue Loudon. And she would have whooped Reed's butt. But he spent $3 million to get her trashed and get Sharon Angle through. And next thing you know, that's what they did in 2016. Remember, Hillary never went anywhere, really. She was just doing anything. All you have to do, and then Pelosi came out with her little video. If you Google this, you can see it. The way they do this is they create something bad, then they talk about it in front of the media, then they encourage the media to write about it, and now it's true.
Talking about
it on the news. And you can hear, she actually said that in a press conference. That's how it works. Mm-hmm. So that's what they do. It's all about a power struggle now. 158 Democrats voted against deporting illegals that have done raped people and killed children. And who does that?
Yeah.
I mean, that's ridiculous.
No one rational.
So the patriot, I don't think I don't see anything happening anytime soon where we're going to get back to that patriotic part, because now some schools you can hang the rainbow flag, but you can't raise the American flag. Right. You can raise this flag, but you can't raise that flag. You know, it's, I don't know how we get back to that. Mm. The group that controls that is so small.
Yeah.
On the internet, it makes it look like it's huge.
Yes.
Huge thing, but it's less than 10% of the population that is driving these narratives. And then you got George Soros out there funding it all. And
yes,
it all come to life. So
yeah, well, give him the Medal of Freedom, you know?
Yeah. He got the highest civilian award. Really?
Yeah.
What did he do?
Yeah.
Yes.
You know, going along with what you said, Frank, I read an article today. It was kind of interesting by and a guy named Tim Miller. I don't know if you know who he is. He was quoting the article. He was a former Secret Service agent, and he started he started a company called Lionheart Protective Services, something or other. Anyway, he brought a really interesting point up, and he said the guy that did his work in New Orleans had forsaken or turned away from his faith in his 20s, you know, late 20s, early 30s. And then the fellow in Las Vegas, he was a part of the 10th Special Forces Group. And he'd seen some things and wrote some emails. The point that they made is that perhaps there's something to this, that some people serving in the military have seen values flipped. And because the values have flipped, they don't know how to reconcile that. And consequently, you know, they turn to other directions. I thought that was kind of an interesting insight because the guy in Las Vegas, for example, he was a decorated veteran, and his uncle, his name was Dean. His uncle Dean said this guy was a patriot up and down. You know, he loved the flag, loved the whole thing. And you wonder how can a person who's so patriotic do something so horrible? But he also made the point that he felt that the special training that his nephew had received in the special forces, he said if he really wanted to do some extremely serious damage, he knew how to do it. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I think when we look at values flipping in the country, like you just mentioned, Frank, you know, why is it okay to fly the rainbow flag and not the American flag? Why in California, for example, and not to beat a bad drum, but in Lompoc, where I live, it's very common. You don't see an American flag, but you'll see a Mexican flag, or you'll see the Mexican flag above the American flag, you know, and you kind of ask yourself, talk about values, how did this thing get so upside down? And if you say anything about it, you're the bad guy, you mm-hmm. know? And so, so I think there was really something to this value system, and especially what they see in the military. You know, that's not what they signed up for. They didn't sign up for drag queens and drag shows and et cetera, et cetera. They signed up for different things. So you have any insight into that? Any thoughts? You know,
the one thing that reminds me of some training that I did a while back on the counterintelligence side on chasing bad guys and finding out and tracking their plans is, and I was taught it's the Star Wars theory that everyone thinks they're doing, both sides think they're doing the right side. And in the example I was taught, the Jewish people have been fighting against the Palestinians and the Arab nations for 4,000 years. Both of them think their fight is righteous. If you talk to both sides, they both of them think that they're doing the right things. And when people get to that point where they think they're doing something good, that's blown up something, or you know, the guys that blew up the Twin Towers, they thought they were on a righteous mission to strike the people that they hate the most. And they think that they were on a good, they're going to be good. You know, all the things that happen when they, in their religion, when they die as a martyr and all that thing. Mm-hmm. And then we fight back because they attacked us, and he got two people. So the gentleman in New Orleans, when you get radicalized like that, you get these beliefs in your head, you're taught these things, and you think that you're doing something good by doing what you just did. Yes. And we're trying to fight the people who are teaching him to do that. So that's the best example I could come up with that. That's something that we train on when we look at preparing to go, you know, if our guy's got a threat against him, we have to understand our enemy. And when you're trying to understand the opposing people, you have to understand where they're coming from to be mm-hmm. able to figure out what they're going to do next. And I'm sure that guy went down. He was going to go, wasn't going to go down without a fight. And he thought it was a righteous thing to do.
Right.
Because of what he was taught and what was in his head.
Yeah. you think our military is going to swing back to the right? You know, the you see that happening? I would hope so.
I do. I think so, and it'll hopefully some of those folks that lost their military careers during COVID get a second chance to get back and serve, because you don't sign up because you are forced to. You sign up because you want to be there, and to let people go that want to be there, and knowing that we're short-sighted on and need more men and women in the military that believe and that are patriots. I hope some of those folks get a second chance to get back their careers without anything on their record that shows anything negative.
Absolutely.
I agree with you on that one as well. One of the young men I'm mentoring left the military after 14 years for that similar reason. Paul, his deal is he didn't sign up for this crap. He says he's seen too much compromise. He's seen too many, you know, you have this code of conduct, you have this code of honor, and he has superiors and folks around him who were violated constantly. His deal is he signed up for one mission. Now he's put on others. One was he was sent to New York doing the riots there. He was sent during the D.C. during the inauguration. He was also there right at the end, right after January 6th. And, you know, given the he's an intelligence specialist. Mm-hmm. So the information he got, the inside stuff he saw, and the conduct of people above him just sort of last straw with him. And mm-hmm. he's done. So being forced to take the vaccine was another one of those kind of things that got him. Yeah. So he's he left. And, oh, by the way, he's also the 36-year-old who had myocarditis because right after, coincidentally, right after he got the vaccine as well. Mm-hmm. But he just, it's like he felt betrayed by the military in the United States. So he left and mm-hmm. has no intention of going back. So just the number of military people I know and talk to, it's the same sort of deal. They're sort of waiting for somebody to come in and get this train back on track. And I'm hoping the same thing, that new administration comes in and corrects it. But now the difficulty is, I think people don't understand, is this, it's a long-term process.
Yes.
It's gone way off track. So this is a multiple year thing to do to get back in line.
Touching on, say, the assassination attempts in the Secret Service, you know, they had 1,500 agents totally just leave when new leadership came in because they were doing the DEI stuff. And and a lot of guys that I've seen and a couple of them that I've talked to, it just became unbearable to be able to be there because they're not promoting and putting people in place because they have the seniority and they've been there and done that and that type of thing. But all the politicians then on both sides, all they wanted, we need more guys. We need more guys. Right. We need more funding to get more guys. But that is not going to fix the problem this year, because it takes about a year, year and a half before a brand new agent is ready, trained, and expected to be able to perform on a presidential detail.
Right.
You don't just get hired and come out of their academy and then get shoved in there. You start doing other things. It takes a long time because, you know, even a regular, I was taught this by the guys that trained me from the California Highway Patrol Dignitary Protection Teams. Even though they were a motor cop for 10, 15 years, when they were approached about doing the dignitary protection side of it, they had to go to 6 months training.
Right.
They're already in 15. What do I have to go to 6 months? Well, you're doing a completely different thing.
Yes.
Same thing with regular police officers. I had a driver assigned to me one time that couldn't drive to save his life. And let alone he didn't know how to do a pickup drop off and all that kind of stuff, but he's an on duty police officer.
Right.
And there's a difference, because that's why you go into separate training for that stuff, go from reactive to proactive and all these things to keep people safe. It's a totally different ball game, and you can't. They just don't fall off, grow on trees, I guess, is the state the thing. But it takes a while to train that. And I've got a guy on the team that protected 3-star and 4-stars in the military, and he had to go to special training before he could get onto those details and be a part of those details. And a lot of people don't understand that. And that's why, I mean, they expect the police department to step up. The police don't know, they don't go through the hour classes of behavioral analysis or setting baselines in crowds and watching hands and watching for eyes and all, I mean, all this crazy stuff that you're supposed to look for, right? They don't go through that training. They go through the shoot, how to arrest, what the laws are, all this other stuff, and then how to react to it. What do you do when someone is a hostage in a house?
Yeah, reactionaries. Yeah.
Correct. Right. Same with the military. The military does the same thing. And, you know, the Secret Service, California Highway Patrol, Dignitary Protection, DSS, they're three of the best protection agencies in the country, and there's a reason why, because they don't leave any stone unturned. And you know, I was lucky to be trained by some guys from the Dignitary California Highway Patrol, Dignitary Protection guys for 9.5 years on the job. But I mean, it is a different. You got to have that mentality when you got to have people in place to set the stage for like New Orleans and find the soft spots.
Yeah,
right. It doesn't, you know, you throw a guy like me out there and walk around, I point them all out to you, you know. They'll think oh my God, who's this guy? Who does this guy think he's coming in here? I'm the chief of police. Who's this guy coming in here?
Yeah.
And you have a guy drive down this road and kill a bunch of people, you know.
Yeah. It's so paranoid.
Yeah, they got to get rid of the competition. I'll run and help them pull together and understand everybody's all different. Yeah. Good to see you, Doc. There, you made it in there.
Good to be here. So let me give you something a little scary. You absolutely are right, Frank. You're saying it's 12 months, and that's just to come out as a newbie, right? Mm-hmm. Now you know the experience you have of
on the ground,
the sweat on their forehead, the look they have, the tremor they may have from their adrenaline being too high, those things. Well, you know what it takes, how many years it takes to get a trauma surgeon? If you lose one, train them up, you get them. As a newbie, is 12 years.
Yeah. Wow. Right. Got to work it out.
And those guys get paid way too much, huh? My God.
Steph, you have a thought there?
Yeah, well, I'll just tell you, being married to him, he will get called literally every 15 minutes. Like, I don't think people realize, like, who do you think shows up at 2 in the morning when you're dying? Right. Like, exactly. Somebody. I don't know if you guys saw the clip, but whatever noise occurred in New Orleans, there were a bunch of cops at a corner and they heard it and they all took off. And to me, I loved to see that, regardless of who's done what right and wrong. Obviously, there's a lot of negligence, but those guys all immediately responded. And that's what I would hope to see, whether they knew what they were prepared for or not. I just, that's good.
Yeah. Hey, Frank, can I just think of one more question here toward the end?
Yeah.
You mentioned something early on pertaining to the inauguration and presidential protection. That may seem way out on the left field, but what's the danger of the mini air vehicles, the drone attacks? Again, I've seen a couple of videos of research where they are trying to arm these little tiny drones and do like a one-shot deal of assassination.
They're already doing that in Ukraine.
Okay, all right.
They're doing that in Russia. That's why I brought up that report. And because, you know, they just put out, I mean, just now. I mean, the war's been going on a couple of years. I think the drones started about 6 months ago or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
They build them so light. They do the 3D printing carbon fiber. Yeah. So mm-hmm. it's so light that you can put something on there that's going to, you know, either drop it and move the drone out, or they can mass produce them and just kamikaze, you know, on a armored vehicle. That's what's in the document. It's a 35-page document on different ways to counteract and to defend against the drone attacks. But they're already using them as weapons right now. And that's, you know, a carbon fiber thing, or if they come up with a different kind of material, you know, the radar might not pick them up.
Yeah.
People
here's what frightened me. I went to a 4th of July light show out at this new golf course, PGA, and they created these pictures of Santa Claus and then stars. There were all kinds of holographic looking things in the sky, and they were hundreds and hundreds of mini drones.
Mm-hmm.
And my question is, if you've got 200 mini drones,
yeah.
If you got 10, how do you stop that? That
Yeah. And see, if you're an advanced guy, Ron, you're sitting there going, wait a minute. Because remember, if we're sitting here thinking about it now, I
Yeah.
guarantee you somebody else in the crowd, a bad actor, has already thought of it. How do I
Yes.
put something on there that's going to explode when it hits the ground where we're, whatever? And then Secret Service, what are you going to do? You can't shoot them down with a handgun.
Right.
No, right.
You've
Unless you're
got
in
to.
Texas, that's but you know, that's another story.
Yeah, if they're in Texas, I mean, the neighbors do it for you. But
Tracking where it comes from is a whole nother thing, right?
correct. Yeah.
Boy.
Yeah.
Folks, we're gonna have to look at our time. We got 3 minutes.
Ah.
Everybody listen to Steph here for a minute. Maybe we go for stretch it out a little bit, Ron. But boy, this is interesting, Frank. Boy, and want to get you back after the I almost said the assumption, ascension, not the ascension. Boy, I must be tired, huh, Ron? That's a good one. I feel that way almost by the time we get there, the
The
inauguration.
inauguration.
Yeah, thank you. Inauguration, yeah, but I'm excited about finally getting there. Steph, share a word with you. We're launching into a year. There's some things we want to bring to you folks, and we just need a little help to get there. We're working hard on it, Steph.
Absolutely. You can always connect with us, get all the information on the website at bbsradio.com/expectations. And earlier, Pastor Joe highlighted something, so I'll just stick to the goodies near the top. Don't, TJ, don't move. Good. Okay. So you can see, you can listen to us live. You can listen to other shows if you want. BBS is fantastic space. And when you just scroll down a tiny bit, there's ways that you can donate. And we appreciate that. We would love to expand the time that we're on the air. That takes funds, obviously. There's the fancy QR code up there. There's buttons that you can use for PayPal, and you can also snail mail contact Pastor Joe if you want. As always, there's all the show information and how to connect with us as co-hosts, and we just really appreciate you hanging out with us, sharing about the show, listening in. All of that really adds up and makes a difference. And we're very excited about 2025, what we have to bring to you and to chat about, and the changes that are coming.
Amen. Amen. I want to give you one thought too as you go on this. The Bible says this is a really important verse, thinking of all the stuff Frank shared here. In Isaiah chapter 41 and verse 10, you all know what that says. It says, "Fear not, for I'm with you." Boy, I'm glad God says that. He goes on and says, "Be not dismayed, for I am your God. I will strengthen you, I will help you, I will uphold you with my righteous right hand, and I will take care of anything that flies overhead." Basically, Scofield version. So let's remember, because we're looking at these. Remember who you belong to. The Lord goes with you. And we've got like 1 minute left here. So thanks for tuning in tonight, everybody. Doc, good to see you. Glad you made it back. It's really good to see you, Tank. And Frank, thanks for being with us. I'm going to call you. We want to get you back with us right after the inauguration and get your insight on some things. And Ron, it's always good to see you, brother. Appreciate the commercial you did there. Good job, bro. Good job. Look good. All right. And Paul, you're in our prayers, man. Lots of special stuff you're doing. So we'll be praying. And we'll just be from there. And tell Christy we're always praying and we're glad she has those protective dogs. She is in good hands. Train them well. All right. Ladies and gentlemen, God bless you and keep you. Welcome to 2025. It's going to be a ride when you ride with God. He's got great plans set for you. So we'll look forward to seeing you next week. Same time, same station, bbsradio.com/Raising Expectations or any of the five platforms. Check us out on podcast too if you just want to listen while you drive. You might get fired up and become a faster driver as you hear what Frank said tonight. So you may be excited to see what happened on that one. So God bless and keep you guys, and we'll see you next week. Thanks, everyone.
All right.
Thank you guys. Thanks,
Bye.
Frank, again.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Thanks, Frank.
Friends, thanks for joining us on this week's program of Raising Expectations. We profoundly hope you found it engaging and at times humorous, but most of all, uplifting, so that we may, with you, one topic at a time each week, become more encouraged to move forward to an exciting future in, as we always say, this thing called life in America today. So let not your hearts be troubled, your family, finances, faith, freedom. It can be a great future as we talk,
listen, respect, and pull together. Please let me hear from you. You can reach me at 972-922-8556. That's 972-922-8556, or Joe Schofield on Facebook or LinkedIn. It'd be a pleasure to know you, and we hope you'll listen in again next week on the BBS Radio Network.